Golfing Mind. You know, at the start of every podcast, I find myself saying the following. Hello, and welcome to the Golfing Podcast, the podcast which looks at the game of golf in general, but the mental game of golf in particular, when appropriate. And I figure if you've been listening to this podcast with any regularity, I think you know what the podcast's about. So I thought I wouldn't start with saying that this week, but now I discover I've just said it. But going forward, I'll try and think of something that doesn't sound quite so serious. But today, as in most podcasts, we try and look at one aspect of golf or a theme, or we look at players, tournaments, and four times a year with some co-colleagues, Neil Faulkner, Mike Kershaw, and Matt Barr, we make our predictions for the majors. Now, last year, we got 3 out of 4 correct. So we're going to be, I'd love to say we're going to try and do one better this year, but trust me, if we could do one better, we'd be based in Las Vegas and we'd be the most sought after go-to sports tipsters in the world. But we generally get, our picks generally are going to get you a little return if you make a bet on them to appear in the top five. And that's not professional advice, that's just the way I think at the moment. So please don't invest any money in our tips unless you're doing it strictly for fun. And with that out of the way, let's have a look at what we're going to talk about today. As some of you may or may not know, my background was as a writer in television, then a producer. And I got sent on a training course once, and it was, I can't remember what the training course was. It was communications or assertiveness or something. And I remember being sat in this room with like 12 other people for about 6 or 8 hours one day with this very pleasant trainer guiding us through a process and being reminded of a joke that I think it was Howie Mandel cracked, but I may be wrong, it may have been another fella. And the joke was, he said, Tupperware, which is like Amway, he said, Tupperware is like God, in as much as the product's great, but the sales staff suck. And what I meant by that was, I was doing this training course, and I thought the information is really, really good. But the delivery, to me, and I was a television producer at BBC Television at the time, lacked connectivity. It was not put into a format or a form that engaged me or made it into bite-sized chunks. And based on that epiphanal moment, I decided I was going to leave television and go into the business of training and development, which probably wasn't one of my better ideas, but youthful ignorance can make you do wonderful things. Anyway, I set up a training company, and that didn't go as well as I'd hoped, and I ended up being asked to speak at conferences, which seemed to be my forte. And then I got book deals with Random House and then a TV series, and it all took off from there. So happy days indeed. But in the 30 years I've been speaking at conferences around the world, I see the same 3 or 4 topics coming up again and again. And, 25 years ago, they talked a great deal about teamwork, or we need to work as a team. And then you'll go to a thing about leadership. We need to be leaders. We need everyone to be a leader in the company. Then you get accountability. Now, we need people to be accountable. And round and round this goes. And in fact, I don't think anything really changes. And often when I've said to them, what's the theme of the conference, they'll come out with a slogan that some PR person or marketing person has come up with. They say, the theme of the conference is tomorrow begins today. And you go, that sounds quite good, but I haven't a clue what you're talking about. And in the last 2 or 3 years, a topic which I didn't really hear about much has come to the fore. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, because it's very relevant to, very, very relevant to golf and to life in general. And that is the key word is resilience. You know, you hear this said, we want to become a very resilient company. We need resilient employees. And I know what they mean. And I'm not very sure that they know what they mean, because resilience as such is a quality of mental toughness. No, it's a quality whereby you are just able to keep going through adversity. So I thought today I would give you some thoughts and reflections on resilience in sport, in golf particularly. In fact, this is going to be about golf, absolutely, but with an overlap to life itself. So anything I'm applying to golf, you can absolutely and 100% apply this to your life. So for me, there's a thing called bounce back ability, and the experts often talk about this as a very key indicator as to a player's talent. Because a statistic that came out many years ago was when they looked at the world's, say, top 10 golfers or top 20 golfers as ranked, and then they compared that with other rankings, you know, like sand saves, drives on fairway, driving distance, three putts, ups and downs, whatever it might be. The one chart which correlated directly, almost directly, not completely. So when you looked at the top 20 golfers, there was one chart that the 16 of those 20 golfers were in, and it was birdie made after bogey. So after this player made a bogey, how long was it before they made a birdie? And that was the bounce back factor, the bounce back ability. So for me, resilience is about not only endurance, but bounce back ability. And it's curious, you know, that when players have a bogey, let's just, for whatever reason, I mean, and I don't want to really examine reasons why people have bogeys or double bogeys. It happens, you know, people hit in the water, they bounce off a cameraman's head, whatever. It's not the actually cause of what happened, it's how it's interpreted. Now, a lot of players will be naturally disappointed. You know, you're playing well and suddenly your ball just trickles down into a stream. Your ball just lands the wrong side of the fairway. Your ball, you know, and you'd hit a good tee shot. And normally when this happens, people do, they get frustrated, they get angry. They feel it's unjust. You know, it's like, you know, I've been playing so well and this has happened. And the net result of that for the majority of golfers, amateur and professional, is it's a downer. You know, they feel, and there's a negative emotion which they then carry around. Now, I know I've mentioned this example a couple of times, but I remember talking to a professional golfer who said he was playing with Arnold Palmer, and he said that Arnold Palmer three-putted the first hole. And he did a good second shot in, so it was a short three putt. And this fellow said that at the end of every hole, Palmer would say to him, "What did you get there?" Because he said Palmer wasn't paying attention to what I was shooting. But he said for the next three or four holes, Palmer said to me on a number of occasions, "Can you believe I three putted on the first green? I never three putt from that distance." He went on and on and on about this three putt, And that's a good example of having a negative experience and living with it and rethinking it and going, "Oh, that's just so unfair." And I think that's what happens. And I think we've got to treat good luck and bad luck the same. You know, if you hit the ball and it bounces off the cameraman's head but lands 2 feet from the hole, you're not going to think, "Oh, that was terrible." You're going to think, "Woohoo!" Now, if it bounces off the cameraman's head and goes into the stream, you're going to go, "Oh, that's not fair. I can't believe that happened. But all you've got to think about is something happened over which you had no control. And once you can do that, it is so much easier to let it go. And it was been interesting in my research over the years and the hundreds of books I have read on this topic of, you know, endurance, survival, mental toughness, determination, commitment, for all these things that I think have a huge impact. When I look at the people, and I read a lot of books about mountaineering and early explorers and even more recent explorers, people who go into the depths of the ocean, or people who sail single-handedly around oceans, people who climb mountains or do huge treks across the wilderness, often things go wrong for them. An animal dies, someone breaks a leg, the boat sinks. And what was really striking for me when I was doing this research is, you know, in these situations, some people survive and some people don't survive. They die, sadly. And when the research was done onto this, it was discovered that the people who all survived had one major thing in common, which was they had something bigger than themselves to live for. So they had a child that they wanted to reunite with, they had spouses, they had family members, they had this absolute burning desire to survive. And now you think to yourself, well, golf, we don't have these situations in golf. And I totally get it. But what we can take away from that is we need to have something bigger sometimes in our game of golf. Now, if you're a professional golfer, I think some of the greatest golfers have this absolute burning desire to create legacy. I mean, Hogan had it, Nicholas had it, Woods had it. Even Nick Faldo talked about it, legacy, that you want to be remembered. And for me, I'm never going to be a scratch golfer, but I do remember always having a very keen sense of I wanted to be known as someone who was a fun person to play golf with. And I remember playing in a competition once, and I was on the green, and someone said, do you want to mark the ball? And the ball was a good 3 feet off my line. And I said, no, Need, it's fine. And I putted, and the ball took a break I just had not seen, and it hit the ball. And so I was penalised for that. And then I missed the next short putt because I was frustrated. And then I tried to one-hand it in, and I whiffed it. So I went from having a birdie putt, and I think it took me, I got a penalty stroke, and then I took four more putts. So suddenly I went from looking at a 3 to walking off with a 7, I think. And finished the round of golf. And afterwards, we were in the clubhouse. One of the fellows said, you know, we were discussing what happened to you in the second green. And we agreed you're the only player we know who would just take it in a stride. He said, and that was it. Well, it's partly because a part of my desire is to be thought of as a good person to play golf with, and never, never under any circumstances to allow my actions to spoil someone else's enjoyment of the game, irrespective of how grim it might feel to me at the time. And this is a quality, I think, in being resilient, is that you just have to find that sort of greater purpose. So you can take the event that happens to you in isolation, say, you know, in the scale of my life, this one thing that happens is not going to define me. Now, we do know of famous missed putts and famous bunker shots that have changed the destiny of a player. And yes, it does happen. But if you can treat it with, it's like Jean Vandeveld, who needed a double bogey or better at the 18th hole at Carnoustie to win the Open Championship. And he took a 7, a triple bogey, because, you know, he was the victim of extraordinarily bad luck. You know, his ball hit the one part of the stand that made it bounce back and he then played the shot, hit it in the burn, had to take a drop. It was one of those horrible things to watch. But now, years later, he doesn't talk about it. If he does, he talks about it affectionately. He laughs. You know, and in a sense, I think he went from being what could have been called a one major winner to someone who we will remember. I mean, he has created legacy, make no mistake. And when I'm asked about the whole area of, you know, being successful in golf, what do the great golfers have in common? There's lots of things they have in common. But resilient players, what do they have in common? Well, I think what they have in common is control. They have control over their emotional state. Now, they may be boiling in the inside, but otherwise they are completely outwardly in control, which can be very disarming. If you're playing against someone who's just had a disastrous sort of triple bogey in a match play and they seem completely unfazed by it, it is unsettling. And it goes back to this thing about, I was talking to a fellow yesterday, I was down at the gym, and this fellow had been, obviously, because he'd been very, very successful with a number of businesses. And he said to me, oh, we're talking about success in business. And he said, there's two qualities successful business people all seem to have. And I was very curious to hear what he thought they were. And the first one he said was, they get up early. And the second one, he said, is they're never late. They're very punctual. And I thought about this, and I thought, you know, if you get up early, which is always challenging to do, and you are always punctual, it means you are completely in control of your day, your control of your actions. Getting up early, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, to do your exercise, to stretch, to do your reflections, your meditations, to journal, whatever it may be, shows discipline. And if you're, and I'm never late, I'm always punctual. Even as somebody said, if I'm, I consider 10 minutes early to be on time. And that's just me. I have this thing about being punctual. It's so important to me. You know, I would rather be at the airport 3 hours early than 1 minute late and have the stress. But that's me. But what it does show is control. And I think mental toughness is about being in control, not only of your day-to-day schedule, but of your emotional response. I have mentioned in previous podcasts that I used to skydive. And it was a great fun thing to do. But the thing about skydiving is if your parachute doesn't open, then, as I once said to an instructor, how long do I have to open my reserve parachute? And the instructor, with a deadpan face, looked at me and smiled briefly. The edges of his mouth turned out and he went, Robin, you've got the rest of your life to open it. And so basically, if your main parachute fails and you don't open your reserve, you'll die. And if you do survive, it would just be, the injuries would just be catastrophic. So what they do is they teach you what's called emergency drills. So they make you repeat them over and over and over again. So when the malfunction happens, and they teach you all the different malfunctions, bag lock, line over, you know, all the things that can go wrong. So you recognize them. And then once you recognize them, you go through the procedure, which is you pull the cutaway handle, then you pull the reserve ripcord, and that's what you do. But when your main parachute fails, it's almost certain that if you haven't prepared what to do, you're going to panic, you're going to be overwhelmed. I think too with golf, we need to be prepared. And one of the visualization exercises I teach to my private students is to imagine three putting from 2 feet, but feeling themselves completely calm in the situation and calm after the situation. Look, nobody wants a three putt ever. But when it happens, and if it happens at an important time, what you don't want to do is become emotionally overloaded, really angry, walk onto the next tee and try and kill the ball because it's the ball's fault. It happened. Let it just really, you just have to let it go. So what can we do to build our resilience up? What can we do? So I'm going to give you about 10 things I think will really, really help you. Some are very easy to do. Some you might find a little more challenging, but they can all be done in real time, which means you don't have to sit and visualize and do the mental conditioning exercises that we are very keen on. So if things go wrong, one of the things that is going to sound so counterintuitive, and you're probably going to go, what? I'm not going to do that. But I really do recommend this, is if you have a bad shot, if something goes wrong at a critical point in the game, don't swear. Smile. Just force yourself to smile. I'm not saying you're going to be happy about it, because you're not going to be happy about it. But if you force a little smile in your face, and even if it's just an, ah, shucks, can you believe that smile? It's going to diffuse the tension from getting any worse. Secondly, don't revisit the upset any longer than it takes you to identify and fix what you think went wrong. But don't sit there talking about it in the clubhouse afterwards to anyone who will come up to you. Don't keep going on about it to your partner about, can you believe I just did that? Because you know something? They don't care. They really don't care. You're bugging them. Secondly, every time you retell it, you're reliving it. Every time you relive it, you're refeeling it. Every time you refeel it, you're embedding it in your subconscious mind. So when the same situation comes up again, and your brain goes into the Rolodex of your subconscious mind to find a similar situation, they're going to find a bad one. And also, practice these things in life. Don't wait until you're on the golf course. If you're in a supermarket and suddenly an old fella in front of you starts bringing coupons out of their bag and delaying your journey through the store. If you get stuck in a queue in traffic because someone's trying to do a turn the wrong way, take a deep breath. Mental toughness is being in control. It's not about enduring pain. It's about staying in control to the best of your ability. You know, and I always say to people, try and be very zen. You know, just don't let anyone be poker-faced in a sense, emotionally poker-faced. I mean, some of the best examples. I mean, my favorite poker-faced athlete of all time is Bjorn Borg. A lot of the younger podcast listeners won't know who he is, but in the 70s, he was this Swedish tennis player who won Wimbledon time after time after time. He seemed to be unbeatable, and what was amazing about him was he never ever showed any emotion. Even when he was playing critical games and he was like about to lose, he never gave anything away. And I think that was a great thing to do. Just, you know, stay in the moment. You know, be an observer if things are going bad. So here we go. I'm going to give you 8 distinct things to do. So you might want to write these down. You might not. Number 1, think tough. Think tough. You know, and I joke to players, I say to them, what would Jason Bourne do or what would Jack Reacher do you think, in this situation? Well, they'd accept it and sort of determined to, I wouldn't say get even, but they would not let it bring them down. They would not let it beat them. And that's what thinking tough is. Thinking tough is something happens, go, okay, it happened, let's move on. Secondly, you know, when something happens, adopt a never-say-die attitude. You might be 5 down with 6 to go, but I hope on that tee box you're saying to yourself, you know, I can win this. Number 1 is think tough. Number 2 is have a never-say-die attitude, which means you get up and you keep going. Okay, number 3, focus on the long-term goal. And the long-term goal is to win the match. The long-term goal is to become a better golfer. The long-term goal is after a number of months or years, you're going to see your handicap improve dramatically. Focus on your long-term goal and use setbacks to learn from, but not, critically, not to identify with. Number 4, suck it up. You know, bad things happen, suck it up. Because what happens is if we allow ourselves to be beaten by it, It's the start of a slippery slope of sort of self-pity. So just suck it up. And it happens, you know, a bit like myself when I had that 4-putt and penalty. You know, I remember thinking to myself, how embarrassing. 2, that's my medal card ruined. And then the third thing I thought was, well, I want to be remembered as being very stoic in this moment. Number 5, stay in control, stay in the moment. It happens. Observe it and go, okay, but don't relive it. Don't talk about it. And that's it. Stay in the moment. Number 6, don't dwell, talk, or relive the mistakes. I've gone on about that before. 7, and this is one, but I talk to players, they kind of go, well, I'm not sure that works for me. And what I say is celebrate success and defeat with equal grace and humility. Celebrate success and defeat with equal grace and humility. You know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And you need to just make sure that you are a good winner and you're a good loser. You are gracious in defeat. And if you want a role model, look at Jack Nicklaus. The number of times he came runner-up in majors. 1977 against Tom Watson and Turnberry in Scotland. It was a duel in the sun. These two guys were running away with the tournament. And Watson made birdie on the 18th to win. And Nicklaus wanted to win so badly. And afterwards, he put his arm on his shoulder. And everyone that played against Nicklaus said he was incredibly gracious in defeat. And I think that's why when you have defeats that come as a result of bad luck, you know, mentally tough people will just be gracious. Mentally weak people will make excuses. And finally, just let go of the negative emotions and feelings you experience, and you know, don't be defined by it. So that's really it. I mean, it is, for me, it's just a great, great thing to be, is to be in control of your emotional state as much as you can be, not to play victimhood. Can you believe this happened? Can you believe that happened? It happens. And for the professional golfers, you know, even more so. And I know I've used this analogy before, but if you're going in for an operation, would you want to have a surgeon who is hot-headed and has a bad temper when they're doing a procedure that might involve a degree of risk? Or would you want someone who's just resilient, who's committed, who's not going to get overwhelmed, who's not going to get grumpy? Same with the pilot, same with anything in life. So I hope there's some nuggets there you can take away, because it's quite a big download today. Because mental toughness isn't about being stubborn, it's about being in control of yourself. It's the only thing you have any influence on. You can't control the ball, the wind, your partner's coughing. You can't do any of that, but you can control how you feel, how you think, and how you react. And once you've got that done, a bit like the skydive malfunction, you'll not only save your life, but you'll have a very pleasant ride going forward. I hope that analogy worked. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, it's Masters Preview. How exciting. It'll be an extended podcast, and get a pen and paper, and you can write down our tips. And I have got two picks I haven't mentioned before, so that's what I'm going to be doing my research on in the meantime. If you're keen on learning to play better golf, I cannot recommend enough investing time in a 13-week online program on the mental game. Not only is it informative, it's actually very relaxing to do, especially the guided meditations. People say their blood pressure comes down and they feel much, much more relaxed on the golf course and they handle pressure better. So that can't be a bad thing. The first lesson is free, and if you want any information, drop a line through the website and someone will get back to you. There we go. So wherever you are in the world, I hope the sun is shining, as it's now shining in London town. Though it's not quite warm enough to wear short sleeves on the golf course. But until we meet again, wherever you are, all the very best.